is the Day Zero update for November 26th, 2017. I'm Filippo D'Onofa.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Chris Sologi.
And this is the post-Black Friday, pre-Cyber Monday show of the Day Zero update. Yeah, I'm sure some of us took advantage of some Black Friday deals. We talked a little bit about that on last weekend, so we won't go into too much details, but the deals are still going on, so if you're listening to this and you want some cheap games, chances are you're going to
have... They're
out there. Yeah, they're still out there.
Mm-hmm.
Wolfenstein 2 for half off, I should probably point that out. It's on sale pretty much everywhere, so yeah, get that. It's good.
Yep.
But yeah, so before we get into our usual show proper, there's a couple of items I want to address. First of all, there's some sleazebags who are... actively working to take Sid Alpha's channel down.
Yeah, not okay.
This is not cool. Especially since Sid Alpha's criticisms are completely justified. So,
and he's not the only victim of this either.
No, there are many people that these jerk holes are going after. And
yeah, but Andrew Watt in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if this is
going
something...
after him for reporting the news.
Yeah.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, for reporting the news and, you know, heaven forfend, having an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez, if that becomes a crime, well, yeah.
Then we're all fucked.
Yeah, so, check that video, see what's going on, share it, comment, whatever you want to do. Let's just make that signal as... big as possible so that it becomes something that YouTube and the other folks can't ignore. That's all I'll say to that for now. In other news, a couple of corrections from last week. We were talking about The Last Guardian. That's a 2016 release. That was December 2016, so I guess it could kind of qualify, but not really.
I was going to say, did the December release disqualify it from last year's based on the rules that we had in place?
Pretty much.
Well, no, because I think some of us actually did pick it. So
actually I did, because I think I picked it myself.
Yeah. So, it was on Brandon's list. I didn't get enough to get on the overall list, but it was still pretty good. It was a 2016 release. Our bad. We correct these things when they're pointed out to us. The second bit of correction that I should make is that Vampire, the game we talked about last week, that's not going to have bullshit DLC or loot boxes, does actually have pre-order DLC, which is just a handful of in-game items, which don't really amount to a whole hell of a lot, but it is worth pointing out that that is a thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's... the other thing.
And definitely doesn't violate the spirit of what we were talking about either.
No. But it is probably.
But it exists.
It exists. It's worth mentioning. It's worth keeping in mind. Yeah. I'm guessing that those pre-order DLC items just end up getting folded into the game anyway. So
yeah.
It just doesn't become an issue. But anyway. As to all of that, we have been playing stuff. For me, it's not been a whole hell of a lot. I've been doing my Game of the Year prep, trying to figure out what the heck is going to be added to my list. I got 5 items so far, and I do want to add some more, so I've been going through that. Which has led me to, curating my backlog, which is enormous at this point.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
That's your rainy day stash.
Yeah.
It's good to have one.
Yeah. Yeah, I like Chris's approach to backlog, where he just has a folder with all of his games in it, and just labeled backlog on his PS4. So, yeah, that may be something I actually adopt, because it's kind of handy. But that's pretty much been it. I'm going to get the Road Rage review, such as it is, done. soon-ish.
I'm sorry, man, but I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. it's a thing. It will happen. So yeah. Anyways, so that's been it for me. How about you, Pat?
Lots of Game of the Year prep for me as well. Pretty much everything I'm playing right now could conceivably end up on my list. Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite is still going strong. It's a shame that this game got off on the wrong foot with the esports video and everything, because Capcom really did put something great together here. Mm. And it's nice to go back to 2-on-2 Marvel, because that's the Marvel that made me a fan. Stormblood is still Stormblood. It is still amazing. Probably the biggest lock for my top 10 on this whole list. And I just can't stop playing it. It is what an MMO is supposed to be in every sense. Nier Automata, started that one last night, and holy shit, is that game schizophrenic.
Yep.
Like, there are times it wants to be an action RPG. There are times it wants to be a straight-up platinum action game. There are times that it wants to be a twin-stick shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times it wants to be a side-scrolling shoot-em-up. I don't know what to expect from Nier Automata in any given moment.
Yeah. That's a pretty good attitude to have, because that game you will find is extremely unpredictable.
Yeah. I'm very entertained. I'm hoping we're going to see a lot more of the 2D space shooter style.
Oh, there's plenty of that. There's plenty of that. You haven't even gotten into the hacking mechanism yet either.
Not yet. It's been mentioned, but then we kind of got our asses kicked by three more of the same boss that we just pulled out the stops to beat one of. So
yeah,
that'll tell you exactly where I am in the game.
Yep. Did you end up having to basically redo the prologue once or twice?
That kind of pissed me off. If I hadn't gotten it the third time, I was going to call it a night.
Yeah, that's Yoko Taro for you. Yeah.
Because it saved the ending that I got, quote unquote, and how long I'd played, I kind of suspected it was up to something.
Yeah.
Whether it was going to be some Doki Doki Literature Club shit or something else entirely.
Yeah.
It was kind of reassuring to know that it had made a record of what I had done.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's like a total of like 21 endings you can get in the game.
Yeah.
The first A through E are like I think it's actually like 27. How many letters are there in the alphabet?
26.
26, yeah. There's 26. The first A through E are the canonical ones. The rest of them are basically joke ones. So,
but the world refused to change.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a fun game. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I love the battle mechanics, and I love how the control scheme carries over from one genre style to the next.
Mm-hmm.
So from a design standpoint, I think it's brilliant. I definitely need to spend a lot more time with it and plan on doing so, particularly on stream, because I'm trying to get some Game of the Year conversations going while I play on stream. So if anyone wants to keep an eye on my channel and join in on that when I'm on, you know, so much the better. But, and then following from a Let's Weekend discussion, I did end up grabbing Injustice 2 off of PSN, so I will be starting that. Well, I actually went through the tutorial last night, but I didn't actually play much into it.
Right.
Because I already watched my roommate go through the story mode when he picked it up on launch. But I do have that as well, and NetherRealm's just been on a really good hot streak since they became NetherRealm, so I'm looking forward to sinking my teeth into this one and see how it stacks up.
Yeah. What was the price when you actually picked it up? Because it's actually gone up.
20.
20? Okay. Yeah. It's 25 now. So.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Nice that you got in when you did.
Yeah, I would not have gone into 25 for it.
Yeah.
Technically, I went to 20 because I was trying to get the $15 or the $14 one at GameStop.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. But yeah, I think I've got some pretty solid gaming lined up for the next little while.
Yeah, seems that way.
All right.
How about you, Brandon?
Well, Horizon Zero Dawn still. I'm pretty sure I'm at the tail end of the main campaign. So when I'm finished with that, I'm probably going to get the Frozen Wilds DLC and give that a shot. I have been told it's really good, so I will give that a shot. Also, I have been playing Stardew Valley in earnest, and as I said on Let's Weekend, I finally get it now, why this game is so popular, because it is genuinely fun, and because the thing about Stardew Valley is there isn't really a way to lose the game. I mean, it's definitely challenging, but there isn't, like, really a fail safe.
Just fear of missing out on cool stuff.
Yeah. Because no matter how bad it gets in the game, you can always go back. You know, there's not like a, like you have to do everything at an allotted time. You can play the game at your own pace. And, go about it, you know, at your own time. It doesn't try to push you or anything like that. So, but it's definitely fun. There's a bunch of stuff you can do. Obviously, the main thing is it sort of being a farming simulator, but there's a bunch of other stuff too. There's like dating sim elements. There's stuff like fishing, and there's a story arc involved with all these different characters with their own story arcs. There's actually a dungeon mode, which is a mine that you can go into, and you know, you actually have to, you go down there, and it's actually pretty useful because it helps you get like raw materials, like for like building things, and like upgrading your equipment. But it's also loaded with lots of monsters and stuff. So on top of that, you also have to deal with them. And it's just overall, it's just a lot of fun. It's a very chill, relaxing game. You don't have, it's not stressful at all.
Except if you're worried about getting people birthday presents.
Yeah.
Oh God, what do they want? Well, they take this plant. Okay. They're happy with that. Or when you got to meet people, too.
Yeah. But, so that's pretty much what I've been doing. So what about you, Chris?
I've been playing some Nier Automata. I finished the first two endings.
Yeah.
The second time through with 9S is a lot faster.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know you don't have to deal with any of the bullshit if you don't want to.
Yeah.
So it was like 21 hours the first time through, like 6 the second time through.
Wow.
Well, that's just partly because his campaign is a little shorter, because in the first one, he's absent for a good chunk of it.
Yeah.
So
you basically do a little bit before you meet 2B.
Mm-hmm.
Then it skips a couple things, then you kind of do some stuff in the middle that you also did with 2B, and then you have like a different ending sequence.
Yeah. And then once you do that and you go into the game a third time, it basically becomes its own sequel.
Yeah, and then I got a separate ending there because I wandered off.
Yeah.
That first little area. I was like, oh yeah, there's something happened with Pascal's village. I went over there and it's like, went to black screen. It's like, well, everybody died because you left. Like, what? Oops. Okay.
Yeah, I gotta love Toro Yoko for that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I'm at the start of the third time through, or the third act or whatever. Still enjoying it. I looked up how you actually buy the trophies. That's a pretty interesting way of doing it.
Yeah.
You have to like beat the last parts of the story, and then it opens up a shop at the end.
Yeah.
That you can go buy all that, the rest of the stuff you didn't want to do.
There's DLC, too, in case anyone's curious.
Yeah.
And it's basically, from what I've been told, the DLC is basically a giant screw you to the concept of DLC.
And it's by the CEO of Square Enix.
Yep.
And Platinum.
Mm-hmm.
Which will be pretty fun, though I haven't picked that up yet.
Yeah.
I've also played Super Mario Odyssey. I beat that when kind of mainlined it the rest of the way. And Bowser's Castle is pretty cool. It's very much a different style than all the others. And it's also kind of weirdly long and drawn out, as you kind of have to go into the electric mode for Mario, and he zips across just vast gaps between these different parts, which means when you beat it and you open up like the free explorer sort of mode, getting to the shop is a pain in the ass, and I gave up on that. They give you a warp pipe, but it takes you towards the end of that whole thing, and because it's kind of this these long gaps, it's kind of hard to figure out where the hell the shop is. It's because I was going to buy one of the suits there because I had enough of the purple currency for that. But yeah, they gave you a really cool new kingdom to explore at the once you beat it, which unfortunately I had spoiled on a podcast about a week ago. So that took a wind out of the sails, but it's a really cool sort of nod to the series past. And I'm looking forward to playing some more of that. Now I can just go and get the rest of the moons without worrying about beating it. Though they even let you buy the moons. I don't know if it's the same moons, but they let you buy like packs of 10 in the shop, which is a bit weird. Yeah, there's also some really cool outfits you get in that last area, themed around different characters that aren't Mario, stuff like that, as well as like a weird skeleton costume that is almost 10,000 gold coins. So I think I have about 5,000, about halfway, so I got some more stuff to do. I want to say, as you get more moons, you open up like a second potential ending. As with like all Mario games, beating it's not actually beating it. It's kind of opening up the second half of the game. But yeah, I'm looking forward to playing some more of that. But yeah, the way they do the ending sequences at Bowser's Castle is really cool. I've also been playing Marvel Heroes Omega. We got a story about that a little bit later, but suffice to say, it's still open for whatever reason, despite the story saying it was supposed to end on Friday. So I made a video saying goodbye, and it's like, well, I'm not putting that up until it's actually done. There's no point saying goodbye. It's like, oh, you can still play. They made all of the microtransactions on consoles, one Eternity Splinter each. So it just takes time to buy all the characters and such, but it's really cool to be able to jump in and say, hey, I'll just be Spider-Man. And pick out one of the weird special costumes they have for him, or you know, Deadpool or any of the other characters, and just start playing with them, see how they're doing and all that, which is pretty cool. On PC, they made everything 50 Gs, but gave all the players like tons of Gs, which is the premium currency. I had like 24,000 when I logged in, and that's too much money. Especially because it's not as easy to just buy everything as it is on console, because they just have so much more stuff. So many more costumes and characters and such. There's about 50 characters at this point. And some of them, like Captain America or Iron Man, have maybe like a dozen or more costumes. And obviously managing the inventory is terrible on that version, because there's just so much stuff it throws in there, and it's real hard to get a grasp of what all of it is. So that was a bit of a nightmare, but it was fun looking at the public chat on the PC version as people are either getting angry about it shutting down or trying to say their goodbyes. And other people are like, when's it shutting down? There's some site that supposedly had a countdown to that that went and didn't, nothing happened. So now people are just like, what the hell's going on? But yeah, that's still a lot of fun. I got a bunch of achievements on the Xbox One version. I was in, I think, Chapter 8 of 9. I did a stupid thing. I prestiged my Spider-Man that I was using. So which resets all of your progress. Obviously, you can't wear your armor anymore. So you're, because you're only level one instead of level, 60, whatever, you can, equip all that stuff. So, I went to go continue and I died in a second. Those enemies, cause they're way more powerful. But yeah, it's still a lot of fun. Some point it's supposed to end. Who knows when? But yeah. I also played Assassin's Creed Origins. I just started that this morning, installed it and all that. So far, it's pretty good. The combat is interesting. The controls are mapped like Dark Souls. So you have the right bumper is your quick attack, your light attack, and right trigger is your heavy attack. And you use the left shoulder button to bring up your shield, I think. And left trigger is for just pulling your bow back, sort of getting ready to shoot a bow or an arrow. And that game has like a ton of loot, as you expect, like Diablo-style loot. It also has tons of looting, sort of similar to the previous Assassin's Creed, where you can just pick up gold or whatever. There's lots of like crafting materials and stuff like that. But you can't really tell what you can loot, like what boxes and such that are around the environment. So just sit there and hold down the up button on the D-pad, and it points out that stuff. Then you go and start looting, and it's like, here's 2 gold, 3 gold, 2 gold. It's like just minor stuff. It's like, just give me bigger boxes with less sitting here just running around the room pressing Y a bunch just to pick up all the loot. Enemies will drop loot as well, though you can get perks in the skill tree that just auto-loots enemies you kill. I'd have to check if there's a way to just have it auto-loot boxes when I'm near them. I wouldn't be surprised, but yeah, that game's going pretty well so far. It very much feels like if you mixed Horizon Zero Dawn with Breath of the Wild with Assassin's Creed a little bit. There's kind of that whole element of just running around, finding these camps, and hiding in the bushes. And in like Horizon Zero Dawn, you can whistle to bring an enemy over, which then they just walk straight at you, dumbfounded, and you just kill them when the prompt comes up, like you do in Horizon. One of the cool things I found is if you pull out your bow and you hover it over the fire, it'll catch fire, so you can do like a fire bow shot. Which is pretty cool. It's very much a Breath of the Wild sort of thing.
Yeah, that's immediately what I thought of.
Yeah. Other than that, the combat's not great. I've been trying to just do stealth as much as I can because it's a lot easier and less confrontational, but I've got some neat weapons. I got a sickle sword. I just got a... it's like a hammer, almost. It's like a heavy hammer. With like spikes on it, so you just destroy people when you hit them with it. There's lots of side quests. The story quest is all around killing these masked deities, I guess. Not really gods, but people that say they're sent by the gods, that sort of stuff, and are exploiting people as you would expect. You're determined to take them down. You start at the beginning of the game just taking down the first one, and there are 4 more to go. Yeah, it's been pretty good so far. I'm looking forward to playing some more of that. And I've also been playing some Super Lucky's Tale on Xbox One. It's okay. As a platformer, it's kind of pulling from... probably from Donkey Kong Country, a little bit of Crash Bandicoot. Sort of Donkey Kong Country, because there are letters hidden throughout each of the levels that you have to collect for one of your clovers. There's like 4 clovers in each level for doing one for beating it, one for collecting the letters, then two that are kind of hidden.
Mm.
One or two of those are usually in like secret underground levels that are kind of very much of the like secret levels in Crash Bandicoot. The thing that really sinks the game is that it's kind of controls poorly.
Mm.
So it's really hard to climb up. You can jump and climb up onto higher ledges in a sense, but it's really hard to tell if you can do that. And sometimes even when I do it, I kind of fuck it up and run right off. And there are some levels that are 2D levels, but they play like they're in 3D, so it kind of controls poorly in that sense. Your character just animates a little bit too much when you're jumping around. So you have that sort of feeling of overcompensating your jump when you don't really need to, because you're not sure, and then you just run off the edge of a ledge. That sort of stuff. It's all right. It's kind of inoffensive, but yeah, it's not great. And if you mess up one of those challenges, one of the four clovers you're trying to get, you have to replay the whole level again to go get it. It's usually like those secret underground levels are one chance. So if you mess it up, and sometimes they're like timed things, you have to collect all these coins, or you can also burrow underground to get coins. They're like these dirt clods you see in the ground that you have to break up. Sometimes they'll have you switch back and forth. And if you don't get it all in one time, you're screwed. You have to basically start the whole level over again. It's like those sort of things that are just not fun.
Mm.
But yeah, it's okay. So far, I have tons of coins from these levels. It's just replaying some of them over and over again. But they also just respawn in the main hub area over and over again. I have like 2,000, and I don't know what they're for. If it's just a weird counter that just keeps going up, or if I'm spending them on something eventually. I tried to Google it, and it was saying there's no, you don't do anything with them, so that just seems weird to have coins in there for nothing. But yeah, it's an okay game. It's not really the Xbox One X showcase that they kind of positioned it to be, having it launch the same day as the Xbox One X.
Yeah.
It looks okay. There's nothing really sharp about it that really stood out in the way that some of the other games have. And I guess the one other thing is I tried to play Dead Rising 4, and it still crashes upon loading up that save. So
oh,
3 weeks out, that game's still busted. I don't know if I have to delete it and re-download it, which I don't want to do because it's 40 gigs. Yeah, that's... I just want to kill some zombies, and the game doesn't want me to do it.
Yeah, maybe they want you to start over again.
I don't want to start over. That game's not that good to start over.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
All right. So, yeah, before we get to the shrapnel, we have one story that is worth pointing out. Actually, Brandon, I'm going to let you do this because it's kind of a Let's Weekend segment, so...
You know how every so often you get some random douchebag, say, during a time of crisis or disaster, when he comes in and says, no, there should be more price gouging, not less?
Yeah.
Well,
continuity.
Yeah, well, we have the gamer version of that. This douchebag named Sammy Barker over on Push Square released a little article called "Analyst: Gamers Are Overreacting Over Star Wars. Publishers Should Increase Prices."
Well, he's not the douchebag.
Yeah.
Well,
he's the one reporting on it.
Yeah.
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 So a capital markets analyst, KeyBank, capital market named Evan Wingren, has said that, okay, so this is what he told clients. "Gamers aren't overcharged, they're undercharged, and we're gamers. This saga has been a perfect storm for overreaction as it involves EA, Star Wars, Reddit, and certain purest gaming journalists and outlets who dislike microtransactions. Oh, you can almost hear the little pinky wrapping around the wine glass.
Somebody should tell these people they did raise prices. That's why we get two or three extra versions of almost every big game out there.
Yeah.
Like there's a $150 version of NBA 2K18. Yeah. I don't know what is worth an extra, what is it, $90?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably lots of whatever VC coins it gets.
Yeah. He goes a little further. If you take a step back and look at the data, an hour of video game content is still one of the cheapest forms of entertainment. Quantitative analysis shows that video game publishers are actually charging gamers at a relatively inexpensive rate and should probably raise prices.
Completely missing the entire point of gaming to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you're... When you get to the point where your games are completely data-driven and formulaic, you're doing something wrong.
Yes.
Those are called idle games.
And point blank, if you eventually got to the point where you were charging for video games based on an hours of entertainment perspective, you would crash the industry overnight.
Yes. For the record, and this needs to be pointed out, despite what all the major publishers say, video game development is not as expensive as they say it is.
We're not as expensive as it really should be.
Yeah. Well, it's expensive for EA and Activision because they go...
And Ubisoft when they put hundreds or thousands of developers on the game.
Yeah.
Like, you could easily cut costs if you needed to.
So yeah. Maybe what we really need is an end to that practice.
Yeah, I think we do.
Considering the fact that they've annualized certain gaming series. Because remember, back when we were kids, you know, just with the SNES or the Mega Drive or whatever, we would have to wait a couple of years between games, you know. And now, you know, you've got people like EA or Activision who have annualized series like Call of Duty or Battlefield or Assassin's Creed. So now they basically have to, you know, try and push these games out and then charge you up the ass to try and make back the cost.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not great. It's not a practice I want to see continue. Mm-hmm. And this asshole is yeah, completely wrong, basically. So, fuck him.
Yeah. And again, if his idea actually were to be enacted, he would tank the entire industry.
Yep.
Yeah, because if you were really going to pay for a fair price for hours per game, a game like let's just give an example here, like Final Fantasy 15 would probably cost you $1,200 to buy.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, Japan kind of has that already. Like, the big-name games are priced higher than the mid-tier games.
Yeah. Well, we kind of had that here, too, for a while. And then it's just levelized at basically $60-$70 for everything now.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it needs to be or not. Okay, there are exceptions to that, you know, but for the most part, that's kind of where we're at.
You just kind of decided that is the cost of a video game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whether it needs to be or not.
Yeah.
Anyways. Okay, so we got a pretty stacked shrapnel section here. And
yep.
Yeah. I'll let you start running through these back, because it's a lot of fighting and RPG stuff, which...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we'll start off with Undernight Inverse Exilatest. Coming to all things PlayStation in February per, I believe, Axis Games.
Mm-hmm.
This is timely because it follows on the heels of the franchise being announced as part of Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle. So it sounds like those two games could land right around the same time, and that'll be really good for French Bread. It'll get their series a lot of exposure.
Mm-hmm.
So, So hopefully that plays out as it could. SNK is not done supporting King of Fighters 14 just yet. There was a recent design contest in the Middle East for to get a Middle Eastern character into KOF. Mm-hmm. That contest has wrapped up. We have the character, and there's also a stage that's going to be accompanying her. We don't know when that's going to happen, but it's going to happen in King of Fighters 14. It's not going into any this content is not going to be for 15 or some other SNK title, so we know that. Mm-hmm. And we don't know if there's going to be further content still to come, so that could be something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Well, if SNK wants to stay consistent, they're probably going to do a 3-pack, so it'll probably be her and two other returners, maybe. So
that would be cool. Know. There's still a lot of great characters that they could add in.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Capcom's Crime Against OCD launches December 5th. And by that, I mean Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite DLC Wave Number 2, the second half of the 2017 character pack. The reason I call it a Crime Against OCD is because the 2017 character pack includes two Capcom characters that are already out, and four Marvel characters. I included a screenshot in the show notes of why this is a crime against OCD, because all six of those characters are occupying the bottom row of the select screen. just take a look at that and give your immediate reaction.
Yeah. It's like,
It's not okay, is it?
No, it's
just
not.
Just don't do that, Capcom.
You have Winter Soldier sitting one space onto the Capcom side, still in a red box.
Yeah. It's like
hopefully the 2018 character pack will even things back out, or at least completely redesign the select screen so it's not so cringeworthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's easy enough to fix. They just need to, take about 10 minutes to rearrange the tiles a little bit.
So. And hopefully at Capcom Cup we get the first word on the 2018 character pack along with the Season 3 Street Fighter V characters, because, like I said at the top of the show, this game actually has a good thing going. I want to see good things come for it.
Yeah. You know, one of the complaints that I've heard about MVCI, it's not actually the gameplay.
It's Capcom's attitude.
Well, it's not just that, but mostly it's the bland presentation. It just doesn't look particularly interesting.
I read a review, it might have been at Destructoid, where they said that all of the UI stuff looked like it was a placeholder.
Yeah.
That they just didn't have time to replace before going gold, and I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
I also find the lack of CFN mentions to be suspect. I hope that CFN gets involved with this, because I want to see Capcom succeed with it. I think it could be a really great platform to unify their fighting properties. So hopefully that isn't what it looks like.
Yeah.
But, so far Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite has been terrific, and I really look forward to seeing what comes of it after December 5th. There's also a huge balance patch coming, which is being called the Dante Must Die.
Dante Must Die patch.
Because if you read the notes, that's basically what's going on with it. Although they are not going to be using it at Capcom Cup, it turns out they said, and the first response on the thread where I saw the news break about that, somebody saying, well, I look forward to watching Marvel versus Dante. So they pretty much had to pick their poison with that. They could either have an overpowered Dante, or they could have players trying to compete with a patch that had not even been out for a week. There's really no winning there.
Yeah.
So, lots of good Marvel news altogether. Staying on the Capcom subject, we have seen a new teaser trailer for Street Fighter V Arcade Edition. Mm-hmm. They've talked about new V-triggers, other features still to come. I think we're going to get some surprises at Capcom Cup when we inevitably get full disclosure on Arcade Edition. There was some interesting teasing going on over the past week. First from Red Bull Proving Grounds, where after the festivities had ended, a bunch of pedals started flying from the ceiling. Mm-hmm. Sakura pedals. Now, that's kind of a vague tease, but if you hold it to the same standard as how they teased Akuma last year, with the kanji on his back appearing beside the stations, then it checks out. Meanwhile, Capcom France had a completely different tease of their own with a heavily mosaiced image of Sodom that was posted, I believe, from their Twitter account. And so we might be seeing the beginning of many teases for Season 3 all coming at once. But it's looking more and more like Sagat is not going to be the opening character this year, which goes against all of the rumors and so-called leaks that have been out so far.
Yeah,
I personally think they're saving Sagat until Evo to just blow the roof off the place. But it's going to be interesting.
It's also a possibility that, you know, for the first time they actually launch two characters at once.
That would put them ahead of schedule, but that would be interesting.
Yeah.
I would not hate that either. And there's also a rumor that there are going to be four characters launching for free with the Arcade Edition patch. So we can't discount that yet either. Because there are 10 characters that all the leaks are fairly consistent about mentioning, and that would substantiate all of them.
Yeah. So good stuff coming for Street Fighter V, it looks like.
Yeah. If you love your Capcom fighters, stay tuned.
Yeah.
So moving on to Sega, Valkyria Chronicles 4 coming to PS4, Switch, and Xbox One next year. Hopefully this brings remakes of 2 and 3 with it, because not enough people got to play those games.
Yeah.
Very few for 3, since that never came over here.
Yeah, it's true.
So fortunately, Valkyria Revolutions didn't kill the franchise.
Yeah, that's good. Because
all the ways of not making a new one or not making another one like that game.
Yeah.
As liabilities go, that one was fairly harmless, apparently.
Yeah.
So, an interesting note here. We've known about the Dragon's Crown remake coming for quite some time now. Now we're finding out that the PS3 and PS Vita versions of it are getting updated to play nicely with the remake.
Nice.
With cross saves and so on. Didn't see that one coming.
No, didn't.
But it's always great to see support of legacy installments, and this should make the PS4 remake a lot more palatable to people who played the original.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes me kind of wonder if maybe they're going to go full full retroactive cross-buy on it.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind getting it for free.
Yeah. I wouldn't put it past them, but, maybe wishful thinking on my part, but hey, never know.
And if you haven't played it yet, definitely get in on the remake, because it is a fantastic beat-em-up RPG.
Yeah.
Anyone who loves multiplayer gaming should absolutely get in on.
Yeah. Let's see, what else we got here? Oh, we got some business news here.
Oh, yeah.
About Marvel Heroes Online.
Yeah, basically they just straight up, like I think it was like the day before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, just laid everybody off.
Yep.
So that's kind of sleazy. You know, the game was being shut down, so I guess they should have.
The writing was already on the wall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Still shitty timing.
And the CEO of Gazillion is a known shithead, basically.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's not his original name.
Mm.
Apparently, if you can probably look it up, Google it, and find out what happened.
Mm.
So he's got a shady past already. It's a shame that he had to ruin David Brezik's company.
Yeah,
so he's probably made enough money; he's retired.
Yeah. So that's irritating and kind of sad. We got Gran Turismo Sport news. It's getting a campaign mode in December. That didn't take long.
No.
Now, is this going to be an offline campaign?
They're adding offline support to the game.
Good.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay, that might be a good jumping on point for me.
It's like, well, because it kind of did have a campaign, but it only worked online. So
yeah.
Yeah.
That was more of a like a challenge
stuff.
So it's called GT League.
Yeah.
It has a series of cup competitions from beginner to pro levels, as well as endurance races that you can take on.
Mm.
And so like the famed Sunday Cup returns.
Yeah.
As well as many others.
So basically like Gran Turismo used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good.
Okay, so that's kind of cool. And then we have a weird story here. The Clicker Heroes developer is not going free-to-play, apparently.
Yeah, with their second game, which I didn't even know was a thing. But they have a big blog about it, basically saying that they're very much aware that they had some players that spent thousands of dollars on their game, hoping that there were people who were wealthy and could afford it, not ones that were feeding an addiction, but sort of feeling guilty about all of this. They said, we're not going to exploit this for another game.
Yeah, so they're going to make an actual game next time.
Yeah, so they're going to charge up front for the next one. Let's see. Oh, yeah, they were doing a thing where, you know, if you regretted spending a bunch of money on the microtransactions, they were offering full refunds, no questions asked. Because they didn't want to necessarily feed into anybody's addiction. It's some nice stuff to see out of a free-to-play developer.
Yeah.
Especially talking about how, let's see, we would give a refund in a heartbeat. It's not like we have artists drawing each ruby by hand. It costs us nothing but payment processing fees. That's to talk about the game design reasons. They want the experience to be good and not have sort of the free-to-play real money stuff putting a cloud over the game.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they have a price yet. $30.
$30 for their new game?
Yeah. See, what do you get for pre-ordering? You get the downloadable for Windows and Mac, all future updates to the game, a Steam key, $20 worth of Clicker Hero 1 rubies, pre-orders character skin, and beta access. So it seems like a decent amount of stuff for $30.
Yeah. Is this a direct sequel?
Yeah.
So it's a,
it seems like instead of that, the thing where you have like that little bit of land with the enemy standing on it as the invisible weapon attacks them, it's a character kind of running along a level. There's a trailer for that. They're kind of standing in line as the character's just running up to each enemy and hitting them. And the weapon is a mouse cursor.
Well, $30 Clicker game, that's...
It'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Mm.
Yeah, well, if they're designing it around an upfront charge, that means that you really have to change the core design to make that work.
So,
yeah, you can't be putting like stupid, ridiculous time gates or stuff that's going to be designed to feed into microtransactions because there won't be any. So
yeah, they liken their updates plans being like the way Dwarf Fortress, RimWorld, Factorio, and other games do it. The updates can change the game to be incompatible with old saves, which would be rare, maybe once or twice a year, and there would be plenty of advance warning. Players have the option to continue playing on the old version or start fresh in the new. To help make things more interesting, Clicker Heroes 2 is designed with multiple characters for you to choose from. So you have different characters, probably have their own different pros and cons.
Yep.
And they're also going to support mods. Which makes sense when you're not charging people
money,
like real money for currency.
Yeah,
to facilitate modding, we would be giving lots of early easy access to the source code, very easy save at any.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Right. I'd be curious to see how that turns out when it comes out.
Yeah, and I'm willing to give it a shot.
Yeah.
Maybe on a sale, though. I'm not sure I'd pay $30 for a clicker game. But.
Yeah, the way this sounds, this is just on their site.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're going to be charging directly on Steam.
Yeah.
But we'll see then.
Yep. All right, so let's get into our main discussion topics of the day. And, of course, we have to start with the Battlefront 2 fiasco, which continued this week.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It is.
Yep.
So we had Hawaii, which is going to be introducing legislation to combat this kind of predatory practices. And
these are kind of heroes of the week to go with the asshole of the week we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I particularly enjoyed the Admiral Akbar quote in there. I don't think that was unintentional. That was most definitely intentional. So Hawaii is looking into this stuff. Belgium is also looking into this stuff. Australia is kind of also looking into it. And then the state of Victoria, they're like, actually, we kind of do think this is gambling.
Yeah.
The UK is looking into it, but at the moment, they don't see it as gambling. Yeah, because of there's the one stipulation that they have in their laws that it's only gambling if you can cash out. And seeing as in Battlefront 2 you can't do that within the game itself, it doesn't qualify as gambling. But Eurogamer pointed out that as with FIFA 18, which a bunch of third-party sites showed up to do exactly that, that is something that they would be able to regulate. So, yeah, keep your eye on that one, because this is going to continue to develop. But, yeah, what else could I probably mention? Oh, yeah, this is kind of how you... Basically, EA managed to completely fuck up in every single way possible at this point. All eyes are on them now. Really, it's... It's like the Eye of Sauron is basically like looking at them, despite the fact that would be WB. But anyway... in light of that, and since these kind of shitty microtransactions were and loot boxes were in Need for Speed Payback, they've bumped up the XP and rep points that you get for actually playing the game now. So it's not so you can actually get more of these boxes easier. So I guess that's okay. That's a thing.
Kind of says a lot about Need for Speed Payback.
Yeah.
That nobody knew had anything in it like that.
Nobody cared. I haven't played the game yet. I don't know if it's any good. Maybe I'll go to the video store and see if I can rent it. Yeah, we still actually have video stores here. Imagine that, eh?
Nice.
Well, we have one.
I have the EA Access trial downloaded, but I haven't started it yet.
Mm.
And finally, there's another... they're kind of EA caving in on... the shareholder demand here.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, shareholders are looking at EA caving on Battlefront 2 at all as, well, a cave.
Yeah.
And it's causing them to bail out of the company. EA stock has plummeted since this news.
Yep, it's gone down 2.5%, which is well, a that lot was
at the time, and it's still plummeting.
Yeah.
Couldn't have happened to a nicer company.
Yeah. So I think this is making a really gruesome example of them that we needed to make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now the game industry knows, just don't go there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just don't even approach the subject.
It needs to be pointed out, because of this, although all eyes on EA, it isn't just on EA. Activision is starting to get the heat, too, specifically with Destiny 2. They're already having to start walking back some stuff. And in fact, they've got like a whole update that they're going to be adding that's supposed to be like cutting back on microtransactions, at least not so much microtransactions, but the prices. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's hitting the game industry as a whole.
Yeah. So.
Oh man. This is what needed to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I want,
somebody had to push too far.
And, yeah. And honestly, I didn't think
it was going to be EA that got nailed to a cross. They're just, when Activision and WB are in the equation, but mm-hmm. it had to happen to somebody.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that Battlefront 2, it's not really about Battlefront 2 specifically. It's a culmination of things all coming to a head about this specific industry practice that had become too, that had proliferated the industry to such an extent that it finally just broke. You know, and part of the reason it happened with Star Wars, with Battlefront 2, is just the sheer sort of visibility of the Star Wars brand.
Well, they got an angry call from Disney themselves, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and let's be clear. I mean, one thing you don't want is Bob Iger hulking up on you, so.
Yeah. He could have you killed.
I almost wonder if the same thing happened with Capcom over the esports video.
I would imagine so.
Yeah. And something else needs to be known. You know, WB was already getting the shit stick because of the stuff they tried to pull with Shadow of War. And, you know, people made a big enough stink for that. And then, like, people had already kind of heard about the microtransactions and stuff that was in Star Wars Battlefront 2, but when people finally started to get beta access, they saw the extent of it and just how utterly brazen it was.
Yeah. And it also kind of proved that EA just flat out lied when they launched the game and they said, the full system wasn't in there. It's really different. Actually, that was it.
Yeah.
So.
And now, you know, because of this, one, I now understand why Mass Effect Andromeda had kind of a subpar release. It's because they basically murdered that game so they could get Anthem. And hopefully, I mean, I'm still hopeful about Anthem. You know, they've got basically all the good people from BioWare working on it. But I am worried.
Yeah. The only like good thing that we can maybe take out of this is that this may be enough to make EA gun shy and not go as far with Anthem. So, yeah.
I think what's going to happen, obviously Anthem, they're going to have time to walk this back entirely and learn from their mistakes. As far as Battlefront 2 goes, I think they're just going to cave completely on it, take their medicine, and move forward.
Yeah. Because for those who don't know, the sales of this game tanked because of all of the bad press.
Yeah.
They basically had to take the bullet. There's just no...
So I would say cave completely, get whatever sales you still can. The shareholders at this point, they're going to be pissed off no matter what.
And because the shareholders are pissed off, it's probably going to mean that some top brass heads are going to roll.
Yeah.
And they're kind of going to have to get some new people to sort of rethink their business model, essentially.
Yeah.
But the best thing they can do right now is to get the gaming community goodwill back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Cave
and lay low for a little while.
Yeah. Cave completely sell as many copies of the game as you can without the loot boxes at all and move forward the best you can.
That's going to be a lot of work because they have to redo the entire progression system of the game.
They do. But, and just hope that scares the shit out of their competitors.
Else.
Yeah.
Anyone who was even thinking about going here, this needs to be a big enough mess that they don't even consider it.
Yeah.
Ever again.
Yeah. All right, so that was Battlefront 2 for this week. What'll happen next week? We don't know. We'll keep reporting on it as it happens.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yep.
Yeah. Finally, in the I feel old department, Mortal Kombat is 25 years old.
That's right.
That is a thing that happened.
Yes, so 25 years ago today,
this week.
Yeah. A group of dudes over at Midway, Ed Boon, John Tobias, and Dan Forden, had been trying to make a game that was going to be based on the Jean-Claude Van Damme film Bloodsport, and that fell through. So because they needed something to, they already kind of had like a sort of a core build already made, but because, they didn't have the license anymore, they needed to do something with it because they'd already sunk this cash into it. So they came up with this sort of not particularly this is the early day of fighting games, so obviously the plot wasn't particularly complex or anything. Just sort of a vague kind of Bruce Lee-ish type, very kind of Enter the Dragon type plot. Yeah. And then in keeping with the theme of what was originally, its idea, Bloodsport, which for those who have not ever seen it, Bloodsport is a particularly violent martial arts movie. Yeah. It is actually quite gruesome.
That's great.
Oh, yeah, it's a great movie if you ever get it. And because they had that, they decided, they'd also gotten like the material for digitized actors because they'd already done another game before this called, I think it was called Pit Fighters, that had also used digitized technology.
Oh God, Pit Fighter.
I don't think that was them, but they did use digitized in some other things. Actually, they did it in NBA Jam, so...
Yeah, and so they decide, we'll get some guys in, we'll do this, and then we're going to add in some fairly spectacular violence. But, of course, the thing was is that, the way that they did finishing moves for this game, which, keep in mind, this was like a completely new thing at the time, was like these sort of obscure button combinations you had to do at the specific time, a lot of times at a specific distance, in order to pull them off. And the results would be what at the time was a level of violence that was absolutely shocking to anyone that wasn't reading comic books at the time. All of a sudden, basically Street Fighter. Okay, so like back then, Street Fighter was the game you went to play because it looked good and you wanted to impress your friends. Mortal Kombat was the game you went to play because while you were out on the playground eating Cheerios, one of your friends said that if you do the right amount of button presses, the blue ninja will rip off a dude's head. And, God help me if he doesn't tear that sucker off with the spinal cord still attached.
Yeah. I don't think that's how physics works, by the way, but whatevs.
But that game basically changed the entire medium. The idea that games were something purely for kids was no longer the case. it started a whole controversy, ended up being one of the centerpiece of a total of four games that became sort of the infamous four of violent video games at the time. It was always the same four. It was Mortal Kombat, Lethal Enforcers, Night Trap, and Time Doom. Killers.
Doom.
Time Killers? Doom was on there, too.
Well, Doom actually came out later.
Doom came out after that.
Yeah, Doom came out later. In fact, I don't think Wolfenstein had actually...
Wolfenstein was 1990.
Yeah.
It was,
but it was still a PC game, though.
Yeah.
It ended up getting, actual, congressional people, infamously Senator Joe Lieberman, who was a Democrat at the time. It eventually came to the foundation of the ESRB, Entertainment Software Ratings Board. And, they took that ball and they ran with it.
they did that. I mean, Mortal Kombat, the original one, wasn't the deepest playing game. It was pretty simple as far as a fighting game goes.
And in hindsight, it didn't control all that well either. It was kind of floaty. And in fact, sometimes it felt like you were actually fighting the controls rather than the other person you were up against.
Yes.
Not quite, original Street Fighter levels of but...
Yeah. But still.
Eventually, then they, of course, they took that and they doubled down on it completely with Mortal Kombat 2, which was...
Yeah. Which was an improvement in every way possible.
Yes. And double the violence, too.
Yeah. Double the violence. It had, much more secrets.
More characters.
Basically, and more importantly, it played really well.
Oh, yes.
So.
There's a reason that.
Too bad
that
about the balance, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, balance. That was a thing that didn't really exist. So.
Yeah. Good thing, though, of course, there's a reason that game was such a favorite at arcades. It was because it was genuinely fun to play.
Yeah.
Obviously today now Mortal Kombat has managed to regain its, popularity, its place in the gaming world after, it had some lackluster sequels for a while.
MK9 basically was where it started.
That was when it arrived.
To prominence again. And 10, I feel, is where they really perfected it.
Yeah. And on top of the other thing, one of the other big problems they had is they tried to do spinoffs.
Yeah.
Which went everything from, there was that okay movie to that kind of crappy animated series that was basically a glorified G.I. Joe in Mortal Kombat clothing.
There's that the web series.
The web series, the live tour, and then of course
the legacy web series actually was pretty good.
So. Oh yeah,
yeah.
I think it was fantastic. I loved its depiction of Liu Kang.
Quick tip: if you're interested in the MK movies and the legacy series, you can get a 3-pack on Amazon and on Blu-ray.
Yeah,
I think it's 12 or 15 bucks. You get the first two movies and the complete legacy series.
So. You take about $5 off for getting Annihilation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're paying
us. By the way,
that.
In case you're ever curious what happened to the... Okay, so the guy who basically produced all the Mortal Kombat media stuff, if you're wondering what he ended up doing, he went off to make a little movie called Food Fight. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and also in the realm of really crappy spinoffs, there was Mortal Kombat Mythology Sub-Zero.
Yeah, which was terrible on whatever platform you played it on.
Yeah, that was basically proof that John Tobias should not be allowed to direct a game.
Yeah.
Ever.
Hey,
Special Forces.
Let's turn the look of Mortal Kombat into a fighting platformer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it did not work.
Shit.
Had to press a button to turn around.
Yeah. But yeah, that didn't work at all.
Hey, guess what? Fighting games aren't great platformers.
Yeah.
Meant to look at one person and fight them only.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also special forces, which should be pointed out that you should avoid at all costs.
Yeah. That game was actually basically released unfinished.
Yeah. And we're not like being facetious. It actually was released unfinished.
Mm-hmm. You know, there was like a whole like half of the game that they never finished at all.
Yeah, and it wasn't really debugged either. So,
oh,
well, there was one good spin-off game, Shaolin Monks.
Yeah,
that was actually pretty good.
Yeah, the 3D brawler.
Yeah,
it's a shame that was never remastered.
No,
that'd be perfect on PS4 and Xbox One.
Yeah. Original Xbox BC may eventually get it. Who knows? I should probably track down a copy of that on PS2 since I've got mine hanging around. Wait a minute. Actually, I have the MK collection, so that means I do have that game. Nice. Forgot about that. So yeah, Mortal Kombat, you're 25 years old, and we all feel really old now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, moving on, we got some good news. Toshihiro Kondo has basically confirmed Trails of Cold Steel 4 for September of 2018.
Yep. Cold Steel 3 is already out in Japan, by the way. It came out in previous September.
It was supposed to conclude the Erebonia arc, but they just didn't have the time to get the whole story done.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to make a fourth Cold Steel, and I'm not going to criticize it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, we can't get all of the story in by release, so let's do this and then finish the rest of the game as number 4. So, okay.
I'm sure they found a really great place to end Cold Steel 3.
Yeah, probably.
I hope so. Yeah. I do not want another cliffhanger like that last one. That was just the most. That was so mean.
Yeah. So a year between Cold Steel sequels, that's not bad.
Oh.
Cold Steel 3, it's out in Japan, as you mentioned. Yep. It's not out in the US yet.
Not sure when it's going to be. XSEED hasn't said anything.
Yeah. So keep your eyes open for that. What else we got here? As head of Square Enix,
Yosuke Matsuda.
Has been talking to Jimatsu and basically saying their position on the Switch, what they're looking to do.
Yeah. Apparently, they look at the Switch as an excellent platform with which to make use of their more traditional IPs. That's a loaded statement.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's a loaded statement, but also a good one if handled properly.
Yeah.
If you're looking at what they've done so far on the Switch, which is I Am Setsuna and the Mana Collection.
Mm-hmm.
And the upcoming
that's good start
Lost
so far.
Sphere.
Yeah, and Lost Sphere. And, yeah. It seems like they're handling it quite right, and it makes the Switch a very compelling platform to people who want this type of game.
If they are looking at the Switch as a place to put the kinds of games that they put on the Super NES and PS1, then anyone who loves JRPGs should run out and buy one if they haven't already.
Yeah.
Because good things are coming.
Or as for Christmas, like I am.
Yeah.
So, and finally,
Akitoshi Kawazu, speaking of classic Square Enix, has announced a Romancing Saga 2 December release in the West, I should point out, for the PlayStation Vita and quote-unquote other consoles.
Hmm.
This is the same Romancing Saga 2 port that landed on mobile earlier this year, and it's a great port. I think it'll do really well on console, and if you love JRPGs the way that Akitoshi Kawazu makes them, if you love the Saga series, don't miss out on this one.
Mm.
because it is an outstanding game. And just as always, Kenji Ito did an amazing job with the soundtrack.
Yeah.
So that is very high on my list of recommendations, and I only hope that it opens the floodgates for other Square Enix mobile titles to get ports to consoles.
Yeah.
By the way, we're still waiting on a Project Octopath Traveler.
Yep.
To fully come out. We don't even know its proper title yet.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be the title.
That may
the way Square Enix does it.
Yeah.
That's true.
You never know.
But I mean, from what we've seen, God, that game is amazing.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's a demo. Well, at least there was. I don't know if it's been pulled yet.
Oh, I have it. It's on there. Yeah.
And it makes me wonder what these other consoles are. I mean, it's coming at PS4. I would guess a safe bet would probably be Switch.
Yeah. Especially considering that it was originally a Super NES title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so it should be there. Windows PC, probably also a pretty safe bet.
Yeah.
I would guess.
Really hoping that this leads to Final Fantasy Dimensions making the jump.
Yeah.
Just going to put that out there.
Hopefully.
Well, yeah. Well, they killed the episodic version.
Yeah.
If you go on the Google Play Store, right now, you will only find it as a complete package.
Yeah. So, good stuff. So I think that's our main stories for the week, guys. It's been kind of an eventful week.
Yeah.
Lots of good
stuff. I am really happy to own a Switch right now.
Yeah, kind of should be. There's a lot of good stuff coming. So let's get into our picks of the week, and I'll start off with mine, which is something that nobody really asked for or needed, but it's here anyway. Somebody made a Doom mod that adds loot boxes to the original Doom.
Satire.
Yeah. Yeah. And it basically the way it works is weapon pickups, power-up pickups and stuff like that have been replaced with a chance to get a loot box. So if you go around and you know that there was a shotgun at a particular place, there may or may not be a loot box there. And you will get keys eventually as random drops by killing enemies with your pea shooter. So yeah, you get one key and then you can open up a loot box and hopefully you get something good in there, or most often than not, you don't get anything that's worthwhile. And you have to basically play the entire game with the pistol, which is,
I was gonna say, if you got a good loot box though, that could break some levels.
Yeah. I mean, you could get, plasma rifle in the first level if you really wanted. It was a possibility, but
well, that was easy.
Yeah, it's like, okay, but yeah, that's a thing. You can download this mod and see it for yourself, or you can just watch the video that's linked on the Mashable page.
Yeah,
it's kind of painful actually. So. Yeah, and I love that they didn't like necessarily actually reference Battlefront 2, but it's totally poking fun at Battlefront 2. So because it's
wrongly implied.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was my pick. How about you, Brandon?
Yeah. So through my sort of gaming research shenanigans, I come across occasionally some things that I am surprised and shocked. Well, some things I come across that have been maybe popular in Japan but never made their way on. Some of them you can kind of understand why, because they might be just mostly Mahjong related, or they're just too weird, like Chouaniki or something. But then every so often I come across something that absolutely should have been given a chance over here had it been done, and probably would have been insanely popular if given the chance. And with that, I came across recently this JRPG series called Metal Max. And like everything about this was basically almost designed to like appeal to me specifically. It's basically a post-apocalyptic, turn-based, non-linear, open-world JRPG where your character gets to pilot around in a tank that he or she can actually, you know, like physically alter and transform and modify to their specific purposes. Each character has like different classes, like mechanic or gunner. At the beginning of the game, each character in the party would have their own tank, but in later games, they would have tanks that would be used by multiple characters at once. It's just, get a look at it, and you'll be like me. You'll like, just how the hell did this never catch on over here? Now, to be fair, they did try to bring over the sort of spiritual successors to the series, which was Metal Saga. Mm-hmm. And apparently those two kind of bombed over here because either the translation or just the UI wasn't really that good. But give it a look. It's because you're going to be like me and just like kind of wonder what could have been. So, Pat, what about you?
Well, I noted this on Let's Weekend, but I finally got the link in the show notes here. King of Fighters Destiny, actually pretty good. So far it's a retelling of King of Fighters 94 and Fatal Fury, but all indications are that it's going to be an ongoing series that covers subsequent KOF titles.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to episode 17 right now. You're looking at about 10 minutes per episode if you skip the intro and the ending. I definitely recommend it. I think SNK is handling it really well, and hopefully it continues to be the ongoing series that KOF deserves. It's not a 100% accurate retelling, but it's serviceable and entertaining, and that's really the best thing you can ask for with something like this.
Yeah. So. Yeah, this is subtitled, by the way, so just keep that in mind.
Yep. It's subtitled in a really good way because it's letterboxed and the subtitles appear off of the actual screen in the black box at the bottom.
Yeah.
So it doesn't interfere with what you're seeing on screen, which I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah. All right. Now, how about you, Chris?
So, there's this game on iOS called HQ Trivia. That is kind of like one versus 100 on the Xbox 360.
Yeah.
So you answer questions. It typically has like thousands of people playing as you try to answer them all in order to win actual money. I think it goes through PayPal is how they pay it out.
Yeah.
And there's an amazing story that happened this past week over the host and the CEO of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So the CEO is Russ Yusupov. He also works with Colin Kroll, who created Vine in 2012.
Yeah.
This game, it's only out on iOS right now. I think they're working on Android version at some point. But the host is named Scott Rogowski. And the Daily Beast wanted to do like a profile on him and sort of just talk to him about all how he's handling this fame because this app exploded on the iOS store. And basically, they talked to him and also reached out to the PR for the game, just to talk to them as well. And the CEO responded and just got absolutely really angry about this whole thing. They interviewed Scott several hours later. They received an email from Yusupov saying that they were not making Scott available to discuss his involvement with HQ with the media press. This is after they already talked to him. So Yusupov found out that they had already talked to Scott and called the reporter, basically said that they were completely unauthorized to write about Scott or HQ without his approval, that if we wrote any type of piece about Scott, he would lose his job. Yusupov continued to threaten Scott's job. You know, the Daily Beast explained the story was framed around Scott's daily life, and he revealed no corporate information. Here's a quote. You're putting Scott's job in jeopardy. Is this what you want? Scott could lose his job. Please read me your story word for word, or you can email to me, which they do not typically share, but he shared some quotes to show that there's nothing insidious here. Your supposed objection began with the line, Scott said that despite the attention, he's still able to walk down the street and order his favorite salad from Sweet Garden without being accosted. He cannot say that. We don't have a brand deal with Sweet Garden. Under no circumstances can he say that. It's all this sort of shit that this guy is absolutely livid. And while he's all doing this, he never once tells him it's supposed to be off the record. He expects it to be. So they literally, instead of writing this profile, they're just writing about the crazy shit this guy said.
Well.
Yeah, so they read another quote from Rogowski saying, I can make people happy and give them the trivia they so desperately love and want. It's been so great to build this community. Yusupov implored the reporter to take that out. As for clarification, he said that Rogowski was absolutely not allowed to say that. He, quote, enjoys making people happy and giving them the trivia they want. He cannot say that people want trivia. It's highly unprofessional of you to reach out to one of our contract employees without my permission, without going through proper press channels.
Okay, this sounds less like he's objecting to something and more like a chemical imbalance of some kind.
Yeah, this... It's all a great story. This is ridiculous. If you reached out to an Apple engineer and they gave you information about the new iPhone, would you run it? No, because you'd have to go through proper press channels. Like, no, people do that shit all the time.
That's called a scoop.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that whole spate where Apple people were forgetting their phones at bars of the new phone. Like, what do you think happens? Let's see. Yeah, the chat with Rogowski was considerably less combative. Yeah, not too much else there, but there was a funny follow-up of the CEO on Twitter sort of talking about the stress of messing up this sort of thing and taking out Scott to get salad, which has a picture of him with Scott, and Scott has like a piece of lettuce hanging out of his mouth as he's taking this picture. Mm. And it looks like he just yelled at him, "Now you stand there and look like you're enjoying yourself. I'm going to take a picture to show we're not losing our minds here." This is all great. Sort of leads into some of the notion, like Giant Bomb. Jeff kept suggesting that they keep Scott locked up in a cage between games when he's hosting it. So when the Daily Beast called Yusupov back a day later, letting him know that the story was being reframed around his comments, Yusupov brought Rogowski onto the phone call and falsely claimed that he never threatened to fire him. My feeling was that it was unethical and that you were compromising the app, said to Rogowski while on the phone with the Daily Beast. Now they want to refrain the story as me threatening to fire you. Do you think that's a good idea? Yusupov then said that the two were actually in long-term contract negotiations and that he never had plans to fire him. He and I are working on a media plan, Yusupov said. I don't want to fire Scott. Scott is our guy. This is just a ridiculous story.
Wow. Now, this would surprise me if it wasn't for the fact that they're based in Silicon Valley.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's the guys that created Vine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Wow. Okay, I think that's as good a spot as any to end for this week. Yeah. So as usual, you can check us out at smashpad.com. Our review of Battlefront 2 is up, and you can read that. Spoiler alert, it's sort of okay, except for the microtransactions. You can also subscribe to the show at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast aggregator. So with that, I'm Filippo Gianolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Chris Elogi.
And we'll see you next week.